In the halls of Philips Exeter Academy, a young Mark Zuckerberg was already establishing himself as both a programming prodigy and someone who enjoyed demonstrating his technical superiority. When he arrived at Harvard, this pattern continued with his creation of FaceMash, which immediately sparked privacy concerns. When confronted, he dismissed it as merely a coding experiment that unexpectedly went viral. Unlike competitors focused on professional networking, Zuckerberg envisioned a casual space where users would freely share personal information, understanding early that collecting open-ended data would be far more valuable than data gathered for specific purposes. In a revealing online chat from this period, Zuckerberg boasted about having access to thousands of students' personal information, noting they "trust me," and infamously calling them "dumb fucks," an early glimpse into his cavalier attitude toward user privacy that would later shape Facebook's corporate culture. By 2005, Facebook had become Silicon Valley's hottest company, collecting unprecedented user data from millions of college students who checked the site multiple times daily. Zuckerberg's audacity became legendary when he rejected Yahoo's stunning $1 billion buyout offer, believing Facebook could grow exponentially larger. His game-changing newsfeed feature, launched in 2006, reorganized content into a personalized stream that dramatically increased engagement despite initial user protests. When faced with backlash, Zuckerberg established his crisis response pattern, acknowledged concerns while insisting users would eventually appreciate the changes. When Sheryl Sandberg joined Facebook in 2008, after growing Google's advertising to $16.6 billion, she immediately recognized Facebook's advantage. Unlike Google, which fulfilled existing demand through search, Facebook could create demand using detailed user profiles and activity data. Facebook's edge came from having users' personal information and engagement patterns in one place, enabling unprecedented targeting precision. Sandberg proposed inviting brands to create interactive campaigns through polls, quizzes, and brand pages that users would share. Despite Zuckerberg's initial resistance to prioritizing profits over product development, she successfully positioned Facebook as the world's largest word-of-mouth advertising platform built on real identities. The 2009 introduction of the like button created a new social currency where users competed for validation. A year later, Facebook extended the like button to external websites, gaining insight into users' off-platform activities. Privacy advocate Jeff Chester monitored Facebook's increasingly invasive data practices, including the Beacon program that published users' purchases without consent. Despite occasional backlash, Facebook's core data collection practices continued largely unchanged, consistently prioritizing growth over privacy. Facebook's internal culture mirrored its approach to user data, comprehensive surveillance justified by radical transparency. Every keystroke was recorded and message monitored. Sonia Ahuja's internal investigations unit maintained extraordinary oversight, even deploying mousetraps with fake secrets to test employee loyalty. When journalist Michael Nunez published a leaked memo about racism at Facebook, Ahuja's team identified the source by accessing his Gmail conversations and fired his roommate merely for liking Nunez's article, demonstrating the company's zero-tolerance approach to leaks. As Trump's candidacy gained momentum in 2016, employee frustration with Zuckerberg grew. When Nunez revealed that Facebook's supposedly algorithmic trending topics feature was actually human-curated, the Republican National Committee accused Facebook of silencing conservative viewpoints. Zuckerberg subsequently met with conservative leaders to assure them the platform welcomed all political perspectives, marking when Facebook abandoned neutrality and began appeasing conservative critics to avoid government scrutiny. What if I told you that a foreign government was using your favorite social media platform to influence a presidential election? This wasn't fiction, but reality in 2016, when Facebook security analyst Ned Moran discovered Russian hackers communicating with an American journalist through Facebook Messenger. Moran found evidence of Russians hacking the Clinton campaign and releasing damaging emails, an unprecedented breach of cyber warfare norms. Facebook's leadership structure buried security concerns under multiple management layers, while growth teams reported directly to Zuckerberg. Moran identified suspicious pages like DC Leaks and Fancy Bear Hack Team sharing stolen Democratic Party emails. The platform lacked policies for handling state-sponsored actors using their system as intended. After Trump's victory, Zuckerberg publicly dismissed the notion that fake news on Facebook influenced the election as a pretty crazy idea. Only in December 2016 did Alex Stamos brief executives on Russian interference, presenting evidence of Russian actors creating fake accounts since March. Zuckerberg was stunned, demanding to know how they missed this, while Sandberg questioned why she hadn't been informed earlier. The Cambridge Analytica scandal of 2018 revealed how a political consulting firm harvested 87 million Facebook users' data without consent for Trump's 2016 campaign. This breach exemplified Facebook's pattern of data misuse since introducing Open Graph in 2010, which gave developers broad access to user data. Facebook consistently prioritized growth over safety, employing 10 times more salespeople than oversight staff. When platform manager Sandy Perikylis raised security concerns in 2012, executives dismissed them. The scandal triggered public outrage, dropping Facebook's stock by 10% and erasing $50 billion in value. More devastating was Facebook's role in Myanmar, where by August 2017, the platform had become a vehicle for coordinating genocide against Rohingya Muslims. With only 5 Burmese-speaking moderators for 18 million users, Facebook had inflamed racial tensions. The UN later concluded Facebook played a determining role in the genocide that killed over 24,000 Rohingya and displaced 700,000. American aid worker Matt Schisler warned Facebook about dangerous speech in Myanmar as early as 2013. In 2015, he visited Facebook headquarters with evidence that hate speech was fueling violence and warned of potential genocide, but Facebook employees dismissed his concerns as implausible. In July 2018, amid scandals and employee demoralization, Zuckerberg declared himself a wartime CEO, adopting Ben Horowitz's leadership philosophy to combat existential threats. This shift ended the autonomy of department heads and subsidiaries as the 34-year-old founder reasserted control over all business aspects, reinforcing his motto, a Mark Zuckerberg production. His declaration followed significant departures, including WhatsApp's John Coom and Instagram's Kevin Systrom, who left after Zuckerberg broke promises about their platform's independence. This power consolidation reflected his competitive nature, previously demonstrated through Facebook's 2013 acquisition of Anavo, an Israeli analytics company that provided insights into global app usage and allowed him to monitor competitors like WhatsApp. Despite scandals, Facebook's business thrived. In January 2021, as Zuckerberg announced plans to reduce political content, Sandberg reported a 33% revenue increase to $28 billion for the quarter, with $55 billion in cash reserves. During the uncertain 2020 election, Facebook temporarily adjusted its algorithm to prioritize high news ecosystem quality sources. Employees witnessed what they called the nicer newsfeed, a glimpse of Facebook's potential. But within days, the old algorithm returned as executives feared conservative backlash and data showed users spent less time on the platform. Facebook faces a fundamental contradiction between its connection mission and its profit motive driven by engagement. The algorithm appears too profitable to change from within, raising the question of whether external forces, regulation, competition, or user revolt will ultimately force the change Facebook seems unable to make itself.